Today in Europe. This is the time of day when the Columbia Broadcasting System brings you reports from abroad, and this is Bob Trout in New York about to call in CBS representatives for their news direct from Europe. Let's hear first from Germany. For today, Germany conducted the most spectacular offensive since the war began in the West. So let's hear the report first of William L. Shirer in Berlin. We take you now to Berlin.
Good evening, this is William L. Shirer in Berlin. Well, here's the German version of that air attack on the 1st of 4th in Scotland this afternoon. After maintaining silence all afternoon and evening, the Germans issued a communique on the subject just an hour ago, that is, at midnight Berlin time. The German version is that between 2:30 and 3:30 p.m. today, German bombers attacked British warships anchored in the 1st of 4th. Two British cruisers, say the Germans, were hit by bombs of heavy caliber. The attack was carried out, the communique continues, despite intense British anti-aircraft fire. Two British pursuit planes were shot down during the battle. The Germans admit that two of their own bombers are missing. Now about the German report of the submarine attack on the British battleship Repulse. All the German papers play up tonight, an official communique of the High Command announcing that the same German U-boat which sank the Royal Oak also torpedoed the British battleship Repulse. A few minutes ago, I heard the British radio deny that the Repulse had been hit, but the German authorities stick to their story that it was. Now, we have two official versions here in Berlin today of the submarine attack on the Repulse. The early afternoon papers, which come out about 2 p.m., carried an official announcement from the High Command saying that the same submarine that sank the Royal Oak also torpedoed the battleship Repulse, severely damaged it, and put it out of action. That was the first story. Then in the later editions, which came out in Berlin about 5 p.m., the High Command's communique was worded a bit differently. It said that the German U-boat attacked the Repulse and torpedoed it. But no more word about it having damaged the British ship or having put it out of action. We asked about this discrepancy in the Wilhelms Press tonight, and we're told that the second communique speaks for itself. In other words, that the German naval command insists that the Repulse was torpedoed. Well, there the matter stands. The Germans also announced the shooting down of one French and one British plane on the Western Front. That reminds me that I traveled along the Rhine, where it forms the border between Germany and France, for several hours last week on my way to and from Switzerland, and I didn't see a single plane in the air on either side. For several hours, we sped along within easy range of the French artillery, and often in full view of French machine gun nests. We could see the soldiers, but not a shot. In fact, travelers told me there that there hadn't been a shot fired over the Rhine since the war began. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
Now, of course, earlier the news has come in that the French forces on the Western Front near the Moselle Valley have been pushed back now from German soil to French soil. So let's hear the report from Paris direct. Let's hear the report from Thomas B. Grandin, and for that purpose, we take you now to Paris.
This is Paris. The three French merchant ships which have been sunk received little publicity in the Paris press today. It's merely announced that everybody was saved except five members of the crews and the captain of the ship Louisiane. The French radio tonight declares that Admiral Darlan has left for Lorient, French warport in Brittany. Despite the German assertion announced by William Shirer concerning damage done to the British battleship Repulse, which has been denied, I believe, by England, the main news tonight seems to be in the air and on the land. A special edition of the Paris Soir headlines the British reconnaissance flight above the central and northern part of Germany last night, as well as this afternoon's attack by German planes on northern Scotland. As for land activities, here's the latest official French communique. The Germans this morning launched an attack backed up by artillery action immediately east of the Moselle and on a front of about 6 kilometers. They occupied the height of Schneeberg, where we had observation troops protected by mines. Checked by our fire, the enemy had to withdraw north of Appa, which they had momentarily penetrated. During the second week of October, the French Navy cut off 25,000 tons of merchandise on its way to Germany. Now, this communique is in two parts, in addition to the sentence concerning the Navy. The first part has to do with Schneeberg, which we learn has been taken by German troops. The second point, APA, is still held by the French. The talk here all day has been about a possible German offensive. As you probably know, it's thought great numbers of German troops have been moved into the triangle formed by Treves, Kreuznach, and Kaiserlautern, an area about 40 miles long at each side. The offensive might be made from this region toward Saarbrücken, or through Luxembourg, or even toward Belgium. There can be no doubt that last night the Germans were preparing an attack, writes Henry Bidoux in the Intransigeant. The Forestier points out that neutral observers evaluate the number of German troops that could be used against France at about 700,000 to 800,000 men. It's thought about 20 divisions will have to be kept in Poland. The question that still remains open is whether Germany hopes to win by a lightning thrust using all her resources at once, or whether, during the recent Berlin conferences, a longer, more grueling offensive was planned. French defensive action is seen in the blowing up of the three Rhine bridges. Meanwhile, today in Paris, 10,000 high school students began the academic year on schedule. This is only about 20% of the usual contingent, the rest being scattered throughout the French provinces. The number of students allowed to attend in Paris has been strictly limited to the air raid shelter capacity of each school. Now for the latest report from Edward Murrow in London. Go ahead, London.
This is London. There's a new feeling of tension abroad in London tonight, for what has long been feared has finally happened. Bombs from German airplanes have fallen on the British Isles, and British warships have sustained damage from the sky. 35 British seamen are casualties. According to the official communique issued by the Admiralty, Air Ministry, and Ministry for Home Security, this unprecedented sky raid occurred about 2:30 this afternoon over the famous Firth of Forth in Scotland. Now, as you will have heard from Mr. Shirer in Berlin, there are, as usual, certain discrepancies between the British and German views of today's action. They do agree, however, in one particular, and that is as to the time when the raid occurred. Here's the British version. German reconnaissance planes had surveyed the situation earlier in the day. Then 12 or 14 German planes returned heavily loaded with explosives. A series of raids began. One bomb glanced off the cruiser Southampton. Her bow was slightly damaged, says the communique. And the admiral's barge and another small craft moored alongside were sunk. Three men aboard the Southampton were hit by bomb fragments, and seven crew members of the cruiser Edinburgh also fell victim to flying bomb splinters. The Edinburgh is a new 10,000-ton cruiser launched last year. The destroyer Mohawk was heading into the harbor when a bomb burst near her. She was said to be damaged superficially, and 25 men on her decks became casualties. 5 minutes after the raid began, the bombers were engaged by the Royal Air Force at the entrance to the Firth of Forth. Two German planes were driven off and escaped out to sea. 10 minutes later, the British airmen battled another German plane. The bomber is said to have fallen flaming into the sea. 15 minutes elapsed, and another battle in the air took place. A second raider is said to have fallen in the ocean, and a third destroyed after being pursued. Two German aviators have been rescued by one of our destroyers, says the British communique. One of them has since died. Scotsmen on the shores of the Firth of Forth tell thrilling stories of the air battle. One witness said he had wandered outdoors, attracted by sounds he described as like skyrockets exploding in the air. He claims he heard no air raid warning, and he remained on the shore to watch the anti-aircraft shells bursting in the sky like so many small patches of white wool against a blue cloth. Another said that a German raider swooped as low as the topmost span of the Firth of Forth Bridge and machine-gunned two cruisers from an altitude of less than 100 yards. During the protracted raid, trains continued to cross the bridge, the eyewitness added. The British communique tonight again denounces German claims that the battleship Repulse was badly damaged, on the same afternoon that His Majesty's ship Royal Oak was sent to the bottom. The Admiralty repeats that neither the Repulse nor any other British ship has been damaged, except those mentioned in official communiques. There is still scant news of activity on the Western Front. This afternoon, newspapers had splashed stories of an imminent German attack across page one. One correspondent went so far as to say that the great battle might already be underway. On the other hand, an informed old gentleman said that he didn't believe that the German military would advertise news of their coming activities in the London newspapers. Up to the present moment, there has been no news in London of any large-scale battle on the front. A message from Columbia's war correspondent, Bill Henry, who is with the Royal Air Force somewhere in France, says laconically, "Nothing doing at the moment. Maybe something in 48 hours. Only news is that my expense account is shrinking because it's hard to spend money out here." Well, war correspondents may not be able to find use for money, but the cost of living is going up in London. The price of gasoline, already rationed here, mounted by 4 cents today. While Germany's Sky Fleet was busy retaliating for the month-old British raid on the Kiel Canal, Nazi diplomats were busy engineering trade pacts. According to the Belgrade Radio, a commercial agreement has been signed between Yugoslavia and Germany. The Belgrade Radio adds a significant point, that part of the German payments will be made in hard cash. There was another train crash in England tonight during a blackout. A channel-bound boat train smashed into a loaded cattle train a few minutes ago. Early reports of the accident say 3 persons have been removed to a hospital. One of tonight's papers has unearthed another balloon story in its search for news. The balloon is tethered in the grounds of Lambeth Palace, resident of the Archbishop of Canterbury. The balloon has been given a name by the ground crew. They refer to it as the Arch Blimp. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
That was the report from London. Now here's news from Moscow. An agreement providing for a considerable extension of trade between Russia and Lithuania was signed in Moscow yesterday by Premier and Foreign Commissar V.M. Molotov and the authorized representative of the Lithuanian government, the TASS news agency says tonight. Also, news from Washington that observers are weighing the president's Armistice Day proclamation in which he expressed his hope for a just peace. And observers in Washington are wondering whether the president was hinting his disapproval of a peace which might be proposed by Adolf Hitler. Just a reminder that at 8:55 Eastern Time, Columbia brings you the nightly broadcast of Elmer Davis and the news. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.